So mindfulness practice is the practice of paying attention. It's the practice of being awake to what is, to what is happening. And as we do that, we become aware very well about how much our mind takes us away from the present moment. Takes us away from what is happening. The paradox is that, in a sense, is that when the mind starts thinking about something else, and you're lost in your mind thinking, that is what is happening. And we're asked to notice that, to see that in the present moment, this is what's happening. Sometimes we say, be here now. And then people say, well, then I can't think about the future. I think about the past. Thinking about the future always occurs in the present. This can't occur anywhere else. Thinking about the past always occurs in the present. It can't occur anywhere else. To be in the present moment doesn't mean you don't think about the future and the past. It means you're completely aware that that is going on in the present. But what you probably find is that you wander off, you know, and get lost in that fantasy world of the future. So I say this because when you notice, when you're trying to stay with your breath and your mind wanders off, you don't have to see that as being wrong or bad. It is what is happening. And what we're trying to do in Vipassana is to wake up to what is happening. Oh, I'm thinking. That's what's happening. And I've heard that what a really good thing to do when you wake up to the fact that you're thinking a lot is to go back to the breath. I think I'll do that. And I'll go back to the breath. But you don't have to say, oh no, I'm lost in my thought. That's terrible. How could I do that? I'm a disaster to Buddhism. They'll never let me into the door again. You know, hope no one else noticed that my mind wandered. You know, all these reactions we have to it. And then people pounce back on the breath as if their life kind of depends on it or not. And the point of mindfulness practice is to notice what is happening, to be present for life as it's happening. You'll notice how often the mind takes you away from that. But when you notice that that's going on, you've come back. You've noticed what's happening. So be very generous to yourself. When you come back to the present moment, come back to the breath. So the idea is to be present for what is. Then one of the guidelines we have for how to be present for what is, because there's an infinite number of choices in this moment, right? You can listen to my voice, you can listen to your thoughts in your head, you can listen to your stomach, you can listen to the traffic outside, you could pay attention to your itch in your knee, you could, you know, think about anything you want. You know, there's all these different choices of what you can pay attention to right now, because a lot of things are happening at once. What we say in mindfulness practice, meditation, is we pay attention to whatever is most compelling, whatever is most predominant. That doesn't mean that we just kind of think about things because it's compelling. It means we bring this silent awareness, this perception of the present moment to bear on what is most compelling in the present moment. And then train ourselves to be in the present moment with what is most compelling. So if you're sitting following your breath, being with your breath, and at some point there's a strong sensation in your body that's more compelling than your breath, the instructions are to let go of the breath and make that strong sensation the object of your awareness, of your alertness, your wakefulness. And that the strong sensation in your body becomes the meditation. If it wasn't that, if the instruction was different, if the instruction was stay with the breath at all costs, and if your knees are screaming, and if your back hurts, or if you, you know, having, you know, waves of rapture through your chest, don't pay any attention to it, just stay with your breath. Then what would happen is that you'd have this tension in your psyche between what you're trying to pay attention to and what is asking for attention. And that tension can take form of then frustration or, you know, various kinds of difficulties. So what we do, you don't need to have that kind of frustration in the practice or that tension. What you do is we try to stay with the breath the best we can. The breath is very, very important for this practice, the meditation practice. So we give some emphasis to staying with the breath. But then if something else really becomes compelling, it's starting to make it difficult to be with the breath, then we let go of the breath and we go to that strong sensation in your body. Now, if it's a beautiful, pleasant sensation, no problem, right? Great. That sounds good. But sometimes it's not, right? Sometimes your knees hurt, your back hurts, you know, you itch, something happens. In our culture, I've noticed for many people that it's counterintuitive to just bring awareness to a place of discomfort. Usually people either want to get rid of it, they want to escape from it, they want to shut off from it. There's a variety of things they want to do besides just focus on it. I've actually known people who, when you've told them, when you feel physical pain in your body, turn your attention and feel the pain, they get angry with you because you've told them to do something. It's like, you know, something ridiculous. Feel your pain? Aren't you supposed to take, you know, ignore it or take aspirin or do something? In meditation practice, we're trying to be awake, free, liberated. And if you're only liberated when things are pleasant, you're not really free. You have to also learn how to be free in the midst of all the whole show of life, including the discomfort. So within reason, in meditation practice, if some discomfort happens, the practice is to bring our attention to that and let that be the focus of awareness. And you can stay with a certain strong sensation in your body for a long time. There's no hurry to get it over with and come back to the breath. And maybe you look at it from different angles, from the top, below, from the side, from the inside. You feel it, you sense it. You kind of get really good at exploring it, like you're an explorer, like a naturalist, really getting to know this, getting in there. And to help keep the focus, it can be very helpful to have a small little mental note where you name it kind of what it is. So if it's, you feel a lot of an itch, itching. If it's a tightness somewhere, tightness. If it's warmth someplace, warmth. And the function of that naming is to help keep the attention right there, so you really feel and sense it. The naming is not, it's supposed to be a very, very subtle thing you do in the mind. They say 5% of what you do is the naming. 95% of what you do is sensing, feeling, seeing what's really there. But you want to stay there and get to know it really well. It has a lot of functions in the practice to do that. One function is that we're trying to learn how to be present for how things are, as opposed to being reactive to it. How many of you, when we did a little exercise here where I asked you to pay attention to the strongest sensation, then I asked you to look at your relationship to it, how many of you discovered you had a relationship to it, a reaction to it? Can you name some of the relationships you had? Someone want to name a few?
Really,
you're bugged. Okay, you're bugged.
Frustration.
Yeah. What else?
Annoyance.
Good old annoyance. What? Wanting to get away from it. What else?
Despair.
Despair. Wanting to fix it. Did we exhaust the possibilities? No?
Only the ones here.
Only the ones we want to admit. And could you see, in seeing the relationship you had to it, could you see that the relationship was different than the experience? Is that possible? Not always so easy to see the difference, but to see the difference. When I lived in Davis, Central California, for a while when I was young. And in the wintertime, they have this tule fog that rolls in. And it's really, in the morning, it's really cold with this fog. And I used to bike to school. And it would be so cold on my hands that by the time I got to school, it would take me about 5 or 10 minutes to be able to uncurl my fingers enough so that I could use a pen to take notes in class, because they could get so stiff from the cold. And I wasn't smart enough to think about getting gloves. It didn't occur to me. And so, you know, this often happened. I would go to school and there'd be this biting, you know, sharp, cold pain going into my hands. And now I used to feel so sorry for myself. I was so hurt so much. You know, I get to get up so early, it's so painful, and, you know, poor me, and I'm not going to be able to take notes when I get to school, and oh. So that was my relationship to my pain. It was, oh, self-pity. Then one day, I was doing that same routine, and then I remembered that sensations I had in my fingers, the sharp pain, the cold, as far as I could tell, was the same sensation that I had as a teenager when I would go skiing. And then I felt exhilarated. And the sensations were the same, but the interpretation, the context was different. And after I made that connection, then when I rode my bike to school after that, it didn't bother me so much. The sensation stayed the same after that. But I had so much, the whole mental world of reactions, relationship to it, that made it seem so much more worse. So one of the things we're trying to do is to tease apart the reaction we have to the experience from the experience itself. So we can just be really simple with the experience. So we explore that. Can I be simple with this? Can I let go of that reaction or not let it get in the way? Can I see the difference between it? Just seeing the difference between the sensations of your body and your reaction, it can be very liberating to see those two different things. I remember once meditating and having a knee pain that was quite strong for me. And I learned that if I stayed very present, the knee pain was manageable. But if I didn't stay present and let my mind have the upper hand, my mind would wander off into its thoughts. And I'd have these, again, self-pity or aversion thoughts. And I get caught up in that world of those thoughts. Then I noticed that my muscles around my knee would tighten up a little bit and it would hurt more. But if I stayed very present then and didn't get sucked into the reaction, then the tightening wouldn't happen. So one of the things that happened, so one of the functions of this mindfulness practice is to learn the skill of being able to be present for how things are without being tripped out by it into thoughts and reactions. Just being there, simple, there. It's a very powerful ability to discover how to do. Sooner or later in your life, you'll come across a crisis where you'll be so glad that you have the ability to be present for how things are rather than how your mind is fantasizing about it or reacting to it. The other is that as we begin feeling what's happening more directly, the information of that experience becomes available to us. We get to work with it and learn how to work with it and be with it in more useful ways. Some of the discomforts that happens in meditation might be from the way you hold tension in your body. And as you learn to bring your attention to the tension in your body, then you begin understanding what the causes and conditions for that tension is. And then you kind of work with that and maybe resolve some of those issues, some of those things, just by becoming aware of it. So we say that we pay attention to what's predominant. Now, the way this course unfolds, what you're encouraged to do is this week in practice, when you practice at home, you just stay with your breath until some strong sensation in your body arises, and then go there and pay attention to that. And once it disappears, and once it feels no longer feels compelling, feels acknowledged, then you can go back to your breath. Or there might be a strong sensation in your body that arises, and then before it is settled or disappears or something, maybe another stronger sensation arises somewhere else. Then very simply just switch to the next one. You stay with what's actually happening. Some people find it very, very helpful to just return into the experience rather than turn away from the experience, rather than reacting to the experience. And another function of this whole practice of turning into the sensation of the body, bringing attention to it, it's helping the body wake up. It's helping develop a greater sensitivity, awareness of the body. And as I said earlier today, it's very helpful to become embodied, to learn how to be in the body. The more your attention goes into the body, the more the body becomes a sensitive organ, the more the body wakes up, the more we become more aware and awake in our body. For people who spend very little time in their body, it takes a while for the body to kind of come alive with sensation and feelings of life and presence. And for a while it can feel very uninteresting to do that even. The world of our thoughts seems so much more important than feeling, you know, sensations of our body, what goes on in our body. Our body seems uninteresting. It doesn't provide us with intellectual satisfaction. It doesn't provide us with, you know, an interesting relationship. It doesn't provide us with wealth. It doesn't provide us with job opportunities. I don't know what you're thinking about in your mind all the time, but the body doesn't seem to provide much. But it's really one of the fantastic open secrets is that if you can get into your body, wake up your body and learn how to be present in your body becomes this tremendous fountainhead of life, of joy, of vitality, of presence, of awareness, of wakefulness. So, does this make sense what I'm saying? Makes enough sense? That's what it's all about, right? Making sense. Okay. Many years ago now, I found myself watching a football game with two other Buddhist meditation teachers, Vipassana teachers, unusual group to watch television with. And this was a time when the 49ers were doing a lot better. And after we watched for a while, the commercials came on. And as any sensible person does, in my view, when the commercials comes on, you push the mute button. So the teacher who had the remote pushed the mute button. And we talked for a while during the commercial. And then after a while it was clear the football game had started again. And then the teacher who had the remote did something very, very interesting. He didn't push the mute button again to get the sound back on. So the three of us were just sitting there watching this football game without any sound. And since, you know, my friend, you know, he's a teacher of mindfulness. I'm sure he was mindful enough to know that there was no sound. I thought, well, instead of saying anything, this is interesting. Why don't I just watch this and see what this is like? And then after a while, he did hit the mute button and the sound came on. And I was struck by the difference between with sound and without sound. Without the sound, I could follow the game. I knew enough about football. These guys line up, they fall down. You can see it. These guys line up, one of them runs free. You know, it looks like you're happy for him. It looks like he's crossing these lines on the grass. you know, looks like he's making it down to those poles are, you know, it makes sense. And then you're happy for him, and then this other guy comes off, you know, from the side and catches up to him and tackles him, and well, that's too bad. And, you know, that's how the game goes. And you can kind of see that without, you know. But when the sound came on, one of the big differences was there was a commentator. And I could really feel how the job of the commentator was to get the audience into the game. And his excitement was palpable. And when that guy kind of, you know, broke free of the line and was going down those 5 yard lines down the field and making it towards the goal line, and the commentator was speaking, I could feel myself getting rushed. I could feel myself kind of sitting on the edge of my chair, you know, wow. And which I didn't do when the sound was off. And I attributed a lot to the excitement of the commentator and the way he was talking about it and the meaning he was adding to it and all these things. The commentator is not the game. The commentator was an addition to the game. It made the game more exciting in some ways, but the commentator was different. It's like the jokes on television. They're not really funny, but the canned laughter tells you, you know, somehow you pick it up as it's funny, it's contagious. Or mood music, you know. It's just a scene of, you know, it's just a path in the woods, you know, going down. It's a nice path. But then there's this music. It's ominous music. And suddenly, you know, something's going to happen. You know, just a nice path in the woods. So the there's a difference between the experience and the commentary. And the same thing is true in our own minds. We have commentary going on in our minds all the time. And sometimes the commentary has nothing to do with what's going on in the present moment. And sometimes it has very much to do with what's in the present moment. We're making comments about it and assigning meaning to it and judging it and all those things. But the commentary is not the same thing as the experience. And we don't exactly have a mute button. So one of the very important things to do in this practice is learn to distinguish between the commentary and the experience. So you're sitting here minding your own business and you have an itch. Happens. Oh. Skin cancer. I'm sure of it. I wonder how quickly I can get to the mirror. Well, we're all sitting so quietly in here. I don't think I can get up right now. So, but, you know, but if I don't get the mirrors now, I won't get to the doctor soon enough. And but I don't have enough money for the doctor. And you know, well, it's because I don't have a good job. And I can never get a good job. And the reason I can't get a good job is because my roommate. And that roommate, I never choose good roommates. And, you know, it's terrible, and I can't afford a house myself, and life is so hard, and I'm depressed, and I think I should, you know, go to therapy. But therapy is so expensive, and I can't get a job that pays enough, and what should I do? But I hear the meditation is free. I think I'll try meditation. And then you wake up and realize you're sitting in a meditation hall. The commentary can take you very far afield in the mind. But to begin to see the commentary is different from the experience is very empowering. Because then you're not caught in the world of fantasy so easily. You realize that commentary tends to be interpretation. And when you see it as interpretation, you hold more lightly until there's more evidence. So with our own experience here, as we're sitting, even just like watching your breath, being with your breath, there's an experience of your breathing, certain kind of way, and then there's a commentary about it. Wow. That's the perfect California breath. You know, like, I'm ready for Esalen, you know. Deep, big, relaxed. Boy, that is the best. I hope they noticed. You know, I should go tell a teacher about that breath I just described. That's just great. Or the opposite, right? Oh no, it's so shallow. It's so fast. I can't admit that I'm just terrible. I'm not really made for this. How could I be this uptight? You know, and so the commentary goes, you know, making story about what's going on, as opposed to, oh, there's a deep, satisfying breath. Oh, there's a shallow breath. Mindfulness practice is learning to be just with the facts. Isn't there an expression in English? Just the facts, ma'am? Yeah. Where's that from? Some movie? Yeah. Oh, I never saw that, but anyway, I guess it's in popular culture. So just the facts. So what is it? What is just the facts in the moment? So it's a training, and that training is very helpful in all our lives. But for now, we're doing it with the body. Just staying with the body, trying to be present for the body sensations. Use it as a focus of mindfulness. This is what's happening in the present moment. The mind wanders off, you come back. You look at it, you try to be simple with it, you try to separate out the commentary, the reaction. So you can just stay with the simplicity of it and see what happens. When it's no longer compelling, you come back to the breath and use the breath as a place to continue developing your mindfulness and your awareness, your concentration. Any questions about that so far? Please.
Are emotions considered facts, or are those, there's so many of them. Or it's just when we start interpreting them or acting out on them, that's when we get in trouble.
Yeah.
We should try to just focus on where we feel the emotion in our body.
But wait, you know, you're a little bit precocious here, because emotions are next week. So, well, you know, you're ahead of the game. And also, you know, thoughts, you know, we're not going to cover thoughts until 2 weeks from today. So, you know, no thoughts. And so next week we'll talk more about emotions. But basically the answer is yes to you, also to feel it in the body directly. And any other questions? Yes?
If being in the present is so important, when is it okay to be thinking and thoughts?
When it's okay to be thinking?
Yeah.
What was the last part?
Just to have thoughts.
But to have thoughts. All kinds of times. I mean, we're very friendly about thoughts and thinking. I mean, it's fine to think, but what we're trying to do is stay present. And the tendency is in thoughts, the thoughts carry us away into their world. But if you can stay very clearly present while you think, then there's no problem at all. There's nothing else you need to do.
What does it mean to stay present?
You're ahead of the game, 2 weeks from now. For now, all we're doing is letting go of thoughts. Because we're kind of building this gradually. Eventually you get the full instructions, but we're kind of building gradually. The idea with this building gradually over 5 weeks is you can get familiar with each aspect as you go along. So right now we want to get really familiar with the body. So best of your ability, just let go of your thoughts. Let go of your thoughts in favor of just being with your breath or being with your body. Is that okay for now? Yes.
You're talking about being aware of the breath.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just had a shallow breath, and I'm aware of that. And my next sensation, I'm not going to use thoughts or emotion, my next sensation might be to deepen it. So are you saying that I should just stay with however I'm breathing at the moment and not try to alter that?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So basically just stay with the way the breath is and just get familiar with it, study it, get to know it. If it's fine to control your breathing for this practice we're doing here. I mean, we don't do yogic breathing, not an intentional big kind of breathing, but if you find yourself controlling your breath, it's fine, be relaxed about it. It's okay. What you're asked to do is then to notice, be present for a controlled breath. You don't have to have some judgment that you shouldn't have it that way. Just what we're trying to do is develop the ability to be present for the breath that you have. Okay. I'd like to do a little exercise with you. So you might want to close your eyes. maybe put your hands on your thighs. And then bring your attention into your right hand. And feel your right hand. Feel the sensations of your hand, the weight of your hand. Vibrations, energy in your hand. Feel the top of your hand. Or what we call the back of the hand. And feel the maybe coolness of the air against it. Or the warmth and the vibration. Feel the palm of the hand, the contact with your thigh. Feel your fingers. And as you feel your hand, have more awareness of your hand, chances are your hand gets a little more sensitive to sensations, more alive or fuller, a wider range of sensations. You could have easily spent this time not aware of your hand. We've been talking about something else. But by bringing your attention into the hand, the world of sensations in your hand comes alive, becomes present. And the more you keep your attention there, the more subtlety, the more variation, the more filled with sensations the hand becomes. In the same way now, bring your attention to that part of your body where you tend to experience your breathing. Your chest, your diaphragm area, your belly, your nostrils, wherever you tend to feel your breathing. In the same way that your hand became more sensitized, more filled with sensations, see if you can let that part of your body where you breathe become fuller with awareness. Vibration, energy, humming, warmth, coolness, weight, heaviness, lightness, fullness, emptiness. And then with a greater sensitivity in that part of your body, become aware of your breathing there. Notice how that body changes, is affected by the in-breaths and out-breaths. And now bring your attention to the strongest sensation in your body, which is not your breathing. In very same kind of way, bring your awareness into that part of your body to feel it more fully. Let the various sensations, the fullness of sensations, come into being more for you. And then come back to your breathing and let the fullness of awareness enter your body, into the part of your body that experiences breathing. Resting with the breath, relaxing with the breath. The thinking mind is often exhausted, tired. Learning to rest the attention, the awareness, in the simplicity of your breath, the simplicity of your physical experiences, is also an opportunity to let the mind rest. So this next week is about developing your awareness of your body, and in meditation, and also outside of meditation. And the more you spend studying, more time you spend studying your body, becoming aware of your body, becoming embodied, feeling your body, the more familiar you are, the easier it will be to understand the instructions for mindfulness of emotions, which is next time. And there is a handout. I don't know if there's more sheets left. If it's not, then it's on our website. You'll find it there. And that's the handout talks about the instructions for mindfulness of the body that I gave today. Kind of does it much more briefly and straightforwardly. And also gives some homework, some exercise you can do to cultivate mindfulness of the body during the week. So if there isn't a handout or you don't get one, you might look on the website. And who remembers where on the website it is? Do you remember?
Under beginning meditation, there's another link that says meditation instruction.
So somewhere there's a link that says beginning meditation, and you go there, you get another click to meditation instructions.
InsightMeditationCenter.org.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are many handouts.
There's many handouts out there, so should maybe be enough. Oh, there, look at them. Yes, great. So, and if you missed the last week's handout, that's on the web also. And we have some here too. So, anyway, thank you very much. I hope you enjoy your body.